You are listening to the Fresh Take Network.
What it is, what it do? Welcome to Fresh Take season finale review of Better Call Saul. Joshua Adam William Arbuthnot that with Ultimate Babyface, Joel Johnson.
How's it going?
Joel, it is going good. We're sorry for the delay in this, but you know, life happens, gets in the way. But we are here now with our Better Call Saul season series, not season. I want it to be a season finale, but series finale. Joel, I don't think you could ask for it to be much better.
No, this is a perfect ending. Saul died. Jimmy went to jail. He finally got to redeem himself. And like, there's so many great little moments within this final episode that were callbacks. You got to see Walt one last time. And finger guns. And Kim made a finger gun herself.
Mm-hmm.
But she kept it to the side. So Peter Gold said that they still think that there may be more to Kim's story moving forward. So
we're not done yet.
I'm wondering if there's an El Camino-like movie on Netflix for Kim.
Well, like Peter Gold and like Gilligan said, like, we didn't think we'd be doing El Camino. We didn't think we'd be doing Better Call Saul. So you never really know with these things, right? Since you kind of brought the Kim thing up, I think we all kind of left. It was like, yeah, I could do a few seasons of Kim just redeeming herself as a lawyer again.
Oh, yeah. Like, just, and it'd be great because she could go to the prison and ask for advice from like her Hannibal Lecter, basically,
mm-hmm.
which is Jimmy McGill. Like, I loved that trial scene. I've watched it a few times. Like, just when he confesses, it's just, because even when he first confessed to Marie, which was a great surprise to have,
yeah,
felt the Saul and felt the sliminess and being like, he threatened me and I was in danger this whole time. And then he's like, no, I wasn't. I saw how much money I could make off this dude and I held on and I was part of this whole ride the whole way through. Oakley's career getting tanked like that was hilarious, especially like, can I withdraw myself? And he's like, no, you can't.
And yeah, you obviously knew Saul had this all planned out to tank his career on purpose.
Well, the minute he heard Kim was in danger, that's when everything changed.
Yeah,
because he originally wanted that ice cream. He goes from Cinnabons to ice cream, and I think it speaks volumes to where Saul Jean was at that point, where his one phone call was to the Cinnabon.
Yeah.
Like, he had no one else to call. There was no one else that cared at all about Jean, Saul, Jimmy McGill. And the fact that we got him confessing all... The ending was predictable. But it was a good predictable. It was like, oh yeah, I know this was coming, but this was well executed.
It all kind of, I mean, in that moment too, when he's talking, obviously he's kind of going there, number one, to have, because Kim has that call with him saying like, just, you know, admit that you did and figure yourself out, more or less, right? And having that moment of clarity too. And I think that's when, even with his brother, he's like, no, I have to admit for this now too. It was just kind of like everything was coming off of him, and that's why we get that beautiful scene in the prison when she's like, you had 7 years, and he's like, now it's 86. And it's just like, but in some ways Saul was like, yeah, but I'm clear now in my mind of everything.
And I mean, it kind of goes back to what Chuck said.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you can never be normal. Like, you always have to have some sort of scheme or
change. Walter said that too, right? He's like, so you've always been like this, when he's talking about the slip and fall. Walt's like talking about, oh, I could have gone into this business and I messed up, and he's like, yeah, I did slip and fall.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Walt, like that scene with Walt, just to go on a tangent here, it was perfect because it showed how much of a garbage human being Walt was.
Yeah.
Because Walt couldn't admit that he regrets what happened to Jesse. Though that is the, when he looks at the watch, that's the watch that Jesse gave him in the show. So he sees that watch, and that's probably one of his regrets. Hank's another one of his regrets. But of course, it comes down to money. Money, power, and being topped up, which is what he was. The only time we ever saw Walt be honest in Breaking Bad was when he told Skyler, I liked it. I was good at it. That was the one time. Here we still see condescending dick Walt. And he was a dick to Jimmy when Jimmy talks about the time machine. Like, he could have been a little bit friendlier to it, but he was just a prick to him. And he was condescending. And even, like, the slip and fall. Like, you felt like Jimmy was going to, Saul was going to kind of show some honesty. And Walt shut that down with the line about, you've always been like this. And it's just like, it's like, oh yeah, that's who Walt is. Condescending, a prick. So having that, and Bryan Cranston slipped beautifully back into the Walt skin. Like, it felt like it was part of Breaking Bad when you saw that.
And the mirror of both of them is so perfect, right? Because both of them are more or less out, right? They can go on, live with their lives. Like, Saul has 7 years. It's fine. He can do that and he'll be out and he can move on with everything like that, right? Walter was with the vacuum guy. He has gotten away with everything. He could have just gone underground and got away from it all. But he had to, at the end of the day, come back and save Jesse, right? And get everybody for their wrongdoings. And at the end of the day, too, Saul had to come back. So there's a very mirror image of both how they ended of. The end of the day, they realized their wrongs to a degree. In that moment, Walt, maybe like you're saying, looking at the watch, is starting to realize those wrongs that he has made. But that part, Saul's still not there yet.
Yeah. And like, for Saul, it was seeing Kim. It was hearing from Kim and hearing what was going on. Because I think Saul's plan was to say, oh yeah, Howard Hamlin, yeah. This is what happened to him. And get some more knocked off.
Yeah.
He's never getting out of prison. Saul is never getting out of prison.
Best case scenario, I'd say he gets it knocked down to 60.
Oh, I think because he lied and he strung along the prosecution, I think he screwed himself.
Well, and you know, it's also interesting, Joel, he's around bread in so many different ways, right? Of the money of bread, the cinnamon bread, and then in the prison bread. So that's kind of like an overarching thing of bread, money.
Well, and he's stuck in being in prison now, but he's going to be treated as a king.
Oh, like, look at the whole Better Call Saul. That was a very cool scene.
Yeah, and he saw a little smirk because he knew he didn't have anything to worry about.
Yeah.
He could still probably do some lawyer stuff here and there for a price.
Yeah.
So he's going to get contraband. He's not going to have to worry about getting stabbed. He's really and truly going to be able to do, it's kind of the amalgamation of all his lives where he's going to be able to be Jimmy McGill. He'll still be able to offer legal advice like better, like Saul would. And he's going to get to do bread like Gene. So it's kind of an amalgamation of everything. And he doesn't have to worry about pulling any scams.
It's funny, too, when he was in the dumpster, I kept on wondering, where did he think he was going? Like, he could have just hidden under the tunnel or gone somewhere else. Like, he kind of had to, like, what was he trying to do getting back in the city? What was the point of that?
I don't know if he was thinking clearly. I think he just thought if he got somewhere and hid for a little bit, the heat would die down and he'd be able to be picked up and then
reload. Yeah, because he was obviously trying to remember the number for the vacuum shop.
Doesn't matter now. And it's funny because it's a callback to the dumpster was pointless in season one when he was digging for sandpiper information.
Yeah.
dumpster dived and it proved that the information was just outside there. He never once had to go into the dumpster to get the paper. Mm-hmm. And here he dives in the dumpster and it proves pointless because he's caught.
Yeah.
And Marie's line about, yeah, that sounds about right where they would have found you was great.
The only bummer with Marie was that she was in black and white, so we got no purple.
Oh, you knew she was wearing purple.
Yeah.
There's no way she didn't have purple on. I did love...
Is she still getting minerals, Joel, all this time? She getting minerals as a widow now?
I think
putting them around Hank's hollow grave.
Well, no, it's the grave's full now. Skylar made sure of that.
Right.
So, but the rocks are probably there.
Yeah. The minerals, Marie.
She probably wanted to throw them at Saul.
Yeah.
It was just like the show was so well done, like the exit sign buzzing again, and the scene with Chuck. I don't know how Chuck never won an Emmy, especially in season 3.
Yeah.
What a joke. But seeing Chuck again, and that reveals the moment that Jimmy wanted to go back to. Because if he just accepted Chuck wanting to look at some of his clientele, I think everything would have played out a little bit better for Jimmy.
This episode probably should have been called The Time Machine in many ways, because if you look at the overarching ideas of Breaking Bad and the Breaking Bad universe at this point, the Time Machine is so perfect, right? Of Mike and regrets. And I think Mike's regrets were the ones that made the most sense, right? Of the taking the bribes and everything like that, and the regrets that he had to leave where he did. You almost would have loved seeing Gus and seeing if he would have been in that sense and what a time machine would have been for Gus, but or Lalo or whatnot. But you kind of just see this overarching fact of how individual situations led. And it's so hard. You come into this show, right? And Better Call Saul was initially supposed to be just like a 30. I think at first it was pitched as a 30-minute comedy. And to see where it is, where you can even have the conversation, is it better than Breaking Bad or not? Which we'll get to at the end. But even for people to even have an idea of that conversation, and then to line up just a throwaway line about Lalo and have Lalo become, you know, I think maybe in a few weeks we'll do like a Breaking Bad universe draft, but Lalo is a high draft pick for everything that Lalo was able to do, everything Nacho was able to do in this show, right? Those two characters were not part of the Breaking Bad universe, and same with Kim. And so those three characters got so established in the show and are so beloved now for what they were able to do.
Kim is probably the number one written female character in this universe. She's probably the most well-rounded, best-written female character that they have. Like, everyone hated Skylar. Marie was kind of just there.
Yeah.
There weren't too many. Jane was there. But there weren't too many strong female characters. And Kim Wexler was, by and large, the strongest and best well-rounded female character that had her flaws, that had her good qualities, that everything just kind of flowed with Kim. And everyone was stressed in this last season that, oh, Kim's gonna die. Kim's gonna die. And it wasn't Kim that died, it was the relationship that died because of the scams.
Yeah.
Because of the scam that Kim wanted to run. Kim could have got out of it. Jimmy gave her an out. Jimmy multiple times gave her an out for running the scam on Howard. But she was like, no, we have to do this.
Yeah.
And it's like, uh-oh. Lalo, Vince Gilligan didn't want Lalo. And Vince was like, no, we don't need Lalo. Peter Gould kept pushing. He's like, we have this name. We have to put him into this world. And Vince has said I was wrong. He's absolutely right to have Lalo in this world. And Nacho just, it was a home, like it feels like it was last season with Nacho's end, but man, was the stuff with Nacho great.
And Michael Mando and Tony Dalton just rocketed themselves to every future role that they can want to get. Like, and it'd be interesting, like, did Michael Mando get nominated for an Emmy?
I don't think so.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, but he was great. Tony Dalton is going to be, And it's funny, Tony Dalton is kind of said, like, I don't really want to be a bad guy ever again. He's like, because Lalo was kind of the peak for me of being a bad guy, I think.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's... anytime he plays a bad guy, you're going to compare it to Lalo.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's good to have a little bit of a variety. Like, you look at how many careers this show has launched, or has, like, Esposito, Giancarlo Esposito, very well could be Professor X.
Yep.
And I think a big part of why he's in this spot is Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
Yep.
Like, that launched him. Bryan Cranston's had a great career post Breaking Bad.
Got Oscar nominated, probably because of Breaking Bad.
Yeah. And he's doing Broadway.
Yeah, he's doing Broadway.
He seems to be loved doing that. Aaron Paul's been fine. He's probably the one that...
He was good in Westworld.
Yeah. Is he still in Westworld? He's still in Westworld, isn't he?
I could give a spoiler, but I think that kind of dictates where Paul's going.
So he's there. But I mean, you look at the writing staff. Like, Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould have their pick of the litter for whatever they want to do next. Yeah. The directors, they've made a lot of... Well, there are probably some directors that were already made, but this has made them even more in a mainstay.
Wasn't Deborah Chow one of them? She did some episodes, did she not?
I think she might have.
There's been a few. There's been a few directors that they've had. I think, obviously, some that we've seen. Because Deborah Chow's the one that did Obi-Wan, and I think she did a few things on there. And some writers, you know, did stuff on Ozymandias. They've done a few Marvel and other big properties as well. So they've definitely been able to grow from that. Odenkirk, his career has completely changed from being a known as doing Mr. Show and being an SNL writer to now being able to really hit dramatic roles. I mean, I almost wonder, Joel, in this, if Cara Bonnet in her late career now, if more people are going to look at Cara Bonnet and be like, hey, let's get Cara Bonnet in some of these dramatic roles, because we didn't know that she had this.
Oh, yeah. Like, this, she was great. Who would have guessed she would have been the downfall? I thought she was going to be Kim's mom, but
yeah,
turns out she was Gene's downfall.
Yeah.
It was great. She was fantastic, and she's a legendary actress.
Yeah.
So to get her is just, and because she's a fan of the show, like, Anthony Hopkins wrote a letter to Bryan Cranston praising Breaking Bad. Like, this is like Godfather 1, and then Saul was like Godfather Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
You can leave it alone.
And Al Camino's Godfather 3.
we'll see what happens with if they do anything with Kim.
Yeah.
I feel like if they're going to do something with Kim Wexler, it's like, hopefully, it has to be really well done.
Well, when she went into that law office and you saw the file, the box files, I was like, I have never been so happy for someone that's about to file paper.
She's finally freed. She practiced what she preached. She confessed everything to Howard's widow and was finally kind of free to go back to making choices again.
Yeah.
And now, like, even that last scene between her and Jimmy smoking, it looked like the noir films that they watched. It was just full circle, perfect.
And apparently that scene before, Joel, had way more dialogue.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Peter Gould, you talked to the people from some of the guys from The Ringer, and said originally that scene had way more dialogue to it. And then they just cut it all off and just had that. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of imagine if it had more dialogue, because Kim barely really talks in that. Neither does he. In some ways, they said everything they needed to say without saying it, right? Even just saying, like, you know, 86 years, you had 7, you were out. And it was kind of the recognition from Kim saying thank you, more or less. And even the looks after, when they're outside of the prison and everything like that. Again, I think it's a look from Kim being like, I'm proud of you in many ways.
It's, and the love that was once there, there was still an ember of it, because we saw the cigarette light up.
Yeah, and I think that answers the question that a lot of people had, is, was the marriage a marriage of circumstance or a marriage of love? And I think we now can say, yes, it was a marriage of circumstance, definitely. But it was also, I do think that they grew to love each other quite a bit. And, you know, this Josh guy that she's with was just a situation of just having someone there to, you know, go about her life. I don't know. I'm pretty sure she dumped Josh.
Oh, yeah. Like, Mr. Yep. Like, that's the most haunting, yeah. That's the scariest part about where Kim landed was the Yep guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, my God, poor Kim. This is horrible. This is hell.
What else do we have from here? I just even him just going to the prison, and you could tell, like, when he's in the prison, before the whole, you know, going to the original lawyers and then going to the court, is like, what is he thinking? It's like, if you could be in his mind at this point, he's already stirring and already thinking. And I brought up to you that movie with Jim Carrey and Ewan McGregor. I love Philip Morris. And in that, Jim Carrey plays a con man in his own right, and he continually is getting out of prison with all these schemes. And I'm like, I could just see the exact same for Saul. Like, because I would not be shocked if, you know, let's say they did the Kim Wexler show, and I don't think they would do this in there, but if we're just kind of talking about the grander universe, I am not going to be shocked in this universe if Saul is already thinking of ways that he can scheme himself out of prison. Yes, he did all the right things, but I think that was more to get Kim off and to clear his conscience. But he's still going to try to do something to scheme himself out of prison.
Stephen Jimmy. He's yep. going to see Kim and he's going to be like, I want to spend time with her.
Yeah.
That's who I want to spend the last little bit with.
Yeah. And he'll probably become an in-prison lawyer, I'm assuming, as well.
Oh, yeah. He's still going to want to do that life. Unless he just wants to make bread in prison.
I have a perfect crossover world, Joel, where the prison that Barry goes to is the same one that Saul's at.
And Saul's Barry's lawyer.
Saul's Barry's lawyer.
And just Barry freaks Saul the fuck out. And it's like, yeah. Oh, God. Walt was a saint compared to
you. Walt was a saint compared to this guy. Yeah, again, we've just been treated by so many good TV, mentioning Barry and Succession and everything like that. But there was just, I mean, and hitting everything with the black and white, too. It weirdly, and I've heard a few critics say, like, that could have been a risk for a lot of people, right? But it was a good way of kind of hitting the tone of where everything is. And I do wonder, that scene with Mike at the beginning, did they go back to the desert and shoot that? Or did they put that in the can knowing what was to come? Oh, it's hard to say. They did, okay.
They went back and shot that, from my understanding.
Was that the turning point for you in this? Like, not that the show was bad, but that, to me, kind of hit like, oh, this show has turned to a different level now from that episode.
It was actually in season 3, when Chuck gets, like, is on trial.
Mm.
It's that point. That whole, the Chuck storyline is when it really, really, the show found its footing, found what it was, and it just took off. Because everything that happened with Chuck is what launched Jimmy into everything else. And Bagman is arguably the best episode they've ever done.
Yeah.
You can make an argument. Point and Shoot is also among the greatest episodes. They have a few episodes that you could be like, that was probably a single best. Even this episode was the culmination of Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And it never once buckled under that weight.
And we kind of got an answer. The good thing for this, too, in the greater Breaking Bad universe, is you have an answer for where everyone is. We know where Marie is now. We know what happened to Skyler. We know Huel is no longer sitting in the room. He's free. The only thing we don't know is, did Walter Jr. get his breakfast?
We're going to assume that eventually Jesse is going to have to come back to New Mexico,
mm-hmm.
because Walt Jr. has become a crystal meth empire.
And or he works at a McDonald's and gets all the free breakfast he wants.
That's entirely possible.
I felt so bad for him, because wasn't there a point where people were like giving him Egg McMuffins and stuff in the street? Yeah.
Yeah. This is what happens when a show gets big and they've got little jokes. It just grabs hold.
So, I guess the conversation, Joel, is it better than Breaking Bad?
I don't know. I don't have an
answer. I don't know either. I need time. I need to do the rewatch. I think it's, you know, there's obviously, you know, the Frasier and the Cheers is one that comes to mind of two shows that are kind of in the same world situation that kind of, I guess you could say, stuck the landing as far as critical success, but that's a comedy, right? I don't, in dramatic sense, I don't know if we've seen a dramatic show that has had two back-to-back good, I mean, look, and a lot of these shows too, like we've talked about, like Dexter did not stick the landing, and it was so close, and New Blood being back, and then New Blood, it just fumbled the football at the 2-yard line for Dexter. It was so close to being back to normal. A lot of these shows, though, they and Game of Thrones. I mean, Game of Thrones, like, we'll see what happens with House of the Dragon, but, you know, with the original, it fumbled the football at the end there. So it's really hard to stick two good and memorable endings, and that's what Breaking Bad and Saul did.
I'm going to always remember the camera pulling up from Walt as he's bleeding. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to remember the gun fingers for Saul, for Jimmy and Kim.
And I'm always going to remember Aaron Paul driving away. I'm like, and he's off to shoot Need for Speed. It was almost too perfect.
Oh, it was comical. It was fucking comical. But like, even the last scenes with Walt and Jesse in this universe just worked. Yeah. We got to see Walt being Walt. We were like, because the perfect thing about that scene was there was no issue with the hot water heater. There was no sound it was making. You could barely hear anything. And Walt decided it was a problem and made it worse and made it worse and worse. The same thing happened with Gus. He decided Gus was a problem and then made it worse and worse until it was unbearable. And Jesse was just kind of outside the storm. He was outside that storm, and Kim had ran in. Kim was done with the storm. She was running away. She was getting clear of this storm, and Jesse was waiting for the storm to come to him, and he didn't know it was coming. I thought both last scenes with both.
I love the last scene with Aaron Paul and Rhea, and with Jesse and Kim. Because it's like these two side characters, for better lack of a term, that got dragged into both these people's worlds and were dragged down into it. And we know that at the end, now that both come out on a better side. When, oh, yeah. And I mean, Kim comes out better than Jesse does, because Jesse loses Jane and the kid and everything, right? Like, Jesse had a much worse downfall than Kim did.
Well, and the other, the woman that he was with dies because of Todd.
Yeah.
I think very cool.
Yeah. Too. Yeah,
it's just like, Todd's creepy.
Yeah, it you can't end it any better than with that. And that I think that prison scene, home run. That prison scene there with the shadows and the look there, I think that's a scene when we talk about television finales. That's a scene that's going to be rolled over and over and over again because of how perfect it was. And we've came back to it a few times, but it is so perfectly. And I think too, the one thing you've hit perfectly here too is, you know, Walt comes in that era, right, with Don Draper and Khaleesi and a few other peoples of being these anti-heroes, right? And, you know, we know Don Draper gets his coke and everything like that. And Walt kind of had the redemption, but it was interesting to have Walt in the station wagon side of things. And then in the water heater side, and you hit it so perfectly of just never letting things be and just pushing them too far. And it kind of goes back to what Mike told Saul at the beginning of this, like, just leave it alone. But it's funny where Walt pushes things too far and Saul in some ways just can't leave things alone.
Yeah, they're very similar characters. And I would make, like, you could make an argument that Jimmy McGill, Saul Goodman, is maybe a slightly more interesting character now than Walt is.
Yeah.
Like, just the level of depth and complexity that they gave a throwaway character. And the only reason Saul existed was, like, that Saul was never meant to be this whole thing. Like, he's just meant to be the skeevy lawyer. And yet they expanded Jimmy's story and tied in with Chuck, Howard, Kim, Mike, Lalo, Nacho, all of it just built this character that had so many complexities and layers, and this fatal flaw that he can't get past until he finally just confesses everything after doing so much damage. Like, they have a master class. Like, these last two shows are a master class in writing, in cinematography, in directing, in mapping out a story that at times, sometimes you have to pivot in a moment to make a judgment call. Like, Mike's character in Breaking Bad was only made because Bob Odenkirk was busy with How I Met Your Mother.
Right.
Like, that was the only reason Mike came in, and look at how important Mike was for Better Call Saul. Like, it's crazy how this show it's lightning in a bottle, this show. These two shows. You'll never have something like this again, where it's a back-to-back TV show that survives the pressure, not only survives, but thrives in Breaking and Better Call Saul. And it's still, you can still go back and watch Breaking Bad, and arguably what happened here changes how you look at Saul in there. And it changes how you look at Mike, and it adds more to Gus. They were able to add to all three characters that you had.
Someone out there is going to make a masterful edit of everything lined up in different ways.
The timelines are all going to line up one day, and I will sit and watch it.
But yeah, you ended it perfectly there, Joel. So we're going to wrap it up there, and unfortunately wrap up what was potentially the show of the year this year. We have 4 months left here, and we'll see what's to come. And yeah, it was a great show. Before I kind of get to what's coming for the week, Joel, any last thoughts really? Or did you kind of hit it there with that perfectly balanced end there?
I think I hit it. I'm not topping that.
So, so the next time you have Joel and I back is will be for Rick and Morty.
Oh, yeah, Rick and Morty's back.
We'll have our Rick and Morty reviews coming weekly as we get ready for whatever Warmageddon is and see what's happening there. We have House of the Dragon coming. We'll have those reviews with Andy Kenyar for House of the Dragon. And, there's a lot of TV coming out here after kind of, Saul kind of carrying the summer. And I guess to a degree, the Bear as well. We are into this Ring of Power, Andor, House of the Dragon, Rick and Morty, Bad Batch, everything all of a sudden kind of coming at us. But thank you to Better Call Saul. Thank you to everyone listening to these pods. And until next time, folks, cheers. Enjoy the day, people.
You're listening to the Fresh Take Network.